What if someone were to give you a very large sum of money? How about $1 million? Would you take that money? Well, what if that $1 million, you had to do something for it? What if you had to be willing to drastically change over the next 3 months? What if you were asked to take three things in your life and to radically change them? What would those things be? How would you go about changing? What do you think your challenges would be in doing these three things? We all know that change is hard and change is painful. And that's why most people avoid it. And this includes us as Christians, because we're people too. When was the last time you looked in the mirror actively and you saw something that you wanted, something that you knew needed to change, and you actually started to do that? Maybe the challenge would be to talk less and listen more deeply. Maybe the challenge would be to be more kind. Maybe the challenge would be to complain less, or maybe not even complain about anything at all. You know, we could all fill in the blanks, and I'm sure for each of us, we would want to see different outcomes. But 1 Corinthians 13, it talks about the actions of love. Love is patient, love is kind. Love does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It doesn't dishonor others. It's not self-seeking. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil. But love rejoices in the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Now, if those aren't challenges for each of us to constantly and consistently do, what is? If you could implement any one of those into your lives fully, and you did it 100% of the time, how much better of a person would we all be? In Matthew chapter 5, in verse 3, Matthew 5 and verse 3, Christ talks about those who are blessed. And it's very similar to the things we find in 1 Corinthians 13. He says, beginning in verse 3 of Matthew 5, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you, falsely for my sake. Christ doesn't withhold here. It's very clear who he blesses. Very clear what changes need to take place in our lives to be called blessed. It's very black and white for us. You know, God isn't here to punish us. He's not standing there waiting for us to make a mistake and then he's going to pounce on us and zap us. Otherwise, we'd all be dead by now. But rather, he is there to lead us and to help us to grow. That's why we read in James that we are to rejoice in trials. Because Those trials are a way of helping us to change. And God needs us to change. And so he gives us exactly what we need. As painful as it was, you can think of Job and what he had to go through. How many days it took for him to go through all the things that he went through. And yet, God never left him. Even though Job was going through all this mental anxiety and pain, God was still there. What about Balaam when he was pinned to the wall by his donkey and it started talking to him? Now, I know some people who would actually like to hear animals talk to them, but that's besides the point. But God used the donkey in Balaam's case to get a point across to Balaam. What about Jonah and the whale? Inside of a whale for 3 days, stinking, dark, cold. I'm sure he had plenty of time to think about what he had done. What about when Saul became Paul? He lost his eyesight. He was doing what he thought right, from his point of view, torturing Christians. And then he had to deal with that mental fact after the fact, and he became a true Christian. He had to think about all the people that he had tortured, killed. Paradigm shifts that we see in the Bible, that we see in our own lives, they're not just from changing from one way of thinking to another. Rather, it's driven by agents of change. In Romans 12 and verse 2, Paul says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God." Prove. Show yourself. Make it a part of you. You know, we can't stifle ourselves and our growth with ideas such as, "Oh, I've tried that before. Oh, I've always done this a certain way." Einstein said, "The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again, but expecting a different result." Sometimes I wonder how many times that plays true in our own Christian lives, in our own reasoning. And Christ echoed this very same sentiment in Mark 7:6-9. Mark 7:6-9, where he says, "And he answered and said to them, 'Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites. As it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. And in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of God, you hold the tradition of men, the washing of pitchers and cups, and many other such things you do.' He said to them, 'All too well, you reject the commandment of God that you may keep your own tradition.'" Now, the people Christ was talking about, they kept doing the same things over and over again, expecting that God was with them, expecting that God was listening to them. But the laws of God don't change. Man's laws change all the time. But it's on the laws of God that we can focus and that we can make serious changes in our lives. I threw out a challenge a month ago in my sermon entitled "In the Service of Jesus Christ." And it was to write down for a week how we stacked up in our actions and in our thoughts in relation to the fruits of the Spirit. Now, maybe you did that on paper, maybe you did it mentally, maybe you didn't do it at all. But I was thinking about it and I realized that our modern lives are stressful and they're challenging. Can't remember who I was talking to, but I made the observation recently that I just wish that times were simpler. But the fact of the matter is that our lives that we are living are now. we have to deal with everything that surrounds us. We set the filters, we set the inputs. Or do we? You know, if we don't set those things in line, then we will just wander around in our lives. You know, it's been said that you become like the five people that you hang out with the most. I wonder about the same thing, about the content that we allow in our daily lives. Mr. Rink touched upon this morning a little bit. Those things that we allow in, the inputs. It's easy to let distractions and stupid, mundane things take hold, take precedent. They can clutter up our days, staying busy, but never growing. Brethren, we are commanded by the laws of God to keep the feast days. One of those days is today, obviously, the Feast of Trumpets. Trumpet symbolizes, in one way, our fight with this world, with ourselves, and with Satan. God's final trumpet will soon sound, and it will mark the end of this age. It is our character and our relentless pursuit in this part is what will help us make it to that very end. All the physical things that we have today, money, houses, cars, whatever, it will mean nothing in the long run. So as we give our offerings today, maybe a prayer for help. Maybe a prayer for strength. Maybe a prayer for change and the courage to keep overcoming is in order.